everybody. Welcome back to another episode of App Chatter. On tonight's show, we are going back to covering iPhone apps. No more iPad stuff. Well, okay, maybe a little bit. Anyway, I am Eric, and I'm joined tonight by Lou.
Hey, Eric, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Not too bad.
Cool. I still don't have my iPhone or my iPad. I'd be doing better if my iPad had arrived.
Yeah, well, you got another week or so, hopefully.
I know. And you know what's even more torturous? I got my dock.
That's the worst.
Because I ordered it. And then tomorrow, my case is arriving.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So you can carry the case around and get used to it.
Exactly. I can fool everybody into thinking I have an iPad. And then when they say, oh, can I see it? No. No, I'm just too good for you. You can't even look at my iPad.
You're going to make a lot of friends that way.
Yeah, well. well, you know, I might not even be getting it as soon as I thought. There's now some question about that.
Yep. They've delayed the international side of things. They really haven't talked about the 3G models in the U.S.
So let's talk a little bit about the international ones. What's going on with that?
Well, they've had such an outstanding rate of orders in the U.S., which I guess is a good problem to have if you're Apple.
Sure.
But they just can't keep up with the demand, so they've pushed back the international shipments, which I guess was going to be April 24th, but they pushed it back to at least an announcement on May 10th.
Right.
So they're announcing pricing. They're going to, I think, I don't know if they're going to be available or just announce a date for shipping on May 10th.
I think that they're allowing pre-orders as of May 10th. So I think that some people emailed Steve Jobs, and Steve directly responds to people's emails, but only rarely. So whenever he responds to an email, it makes news, at least on the blogs and such.
Mm.
So some people were kind of angry and emailed him about it, and said that he said in one of the responses that it was going to be late May before the international ones actually arrive.
Yes, yeah, I heard. Okay, before they arrive, because the press release said May 10th.
Well, that's for the pre-orders, I think, and for the pricing. Because they don't even know how much it's going to cost.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and that's got to be annoying.
Definitely.
So my concern is that the 3G here in the U.S. was going to have been released at the end of April. And when they announced that the pre-orders for the international ones were going to be April 24th, and it was a Saturday, kind of like the April 3rd release of the Wi-Fi versions, the general consensus was that it was probably going to also be the arrival date for the 3G here in the U.S.
And I've got to figure that 3G date's still going to hold up, though, because they've had to be in a production line by now. You know, they were planning for that shipment already. I don't think increased sales of the Wi-Fi model would hurt that.
You wouldn't think so. Well, fortunately, Steve Jobs cleared it up for us, because somebody wrote in and asked, and this is not a direct quote, but it's basically how the email went. He said, are we going to still see the U.S. 3G versions at the end of April? Or are they going to be delayed too? And he responded and said, yes.
That's a very concise answer.
Yeah. So
directed
either yes,
point,
we're going
possibly
to see them in April, or yes, we won't. Wow. That was very helpful. Yeah. So take that how you will.
Well, keep your fingers crossed.
Yeah.
You've got about 10 days to wait, hopefully.
It's going to be a rough 10 days, too. And the worst part is, I must have downloaded between 20 and 30 apps for the iPad already. And I want to point out, I've only paid $1.99 so far. So all of this stuff about pricing for iPad apps, keep in mind, I think that's for the high-profile stuff. There's still a lot of cheap or free stuff out there.
You got some good bargains. And how is that working out for you?
Well, so far, it's awesome, because when I go into iTunes, I can look at a whole section of apps that I can't use.
Cool.
Yeah, it's awesome, let me tell you. Okay, enough whining.
Yes.
Enough whining.
On to iPhone stuff.
Yeah, back to iPhone stuff. So the iPhone 4.0 release, we discussed that last week. And right after it came out, the developers noticed that the terms of service had changed. And Apple was going to block any cross-compiled. Basically, if you used another development engine, such as a cross-platform engine, to develop an app, then Apple is not going to allow it into the store. Now, the most prominent example of this is Flash. because the new version of, what is it, like CS5 or something?
CS5, yeah. Yeah, that built in. That was going to be their big release when they released CS5.
So you could make a Flash app and then port it over to the iPhone. Now, this also affects other engines, too. Everybody's talking about Flash, but there's a lot of stuff in the iTunes store that's developed under Unity 3D, things like that. So this is going to affect more than just Flash, but I guess we'll have to see how it actually ends up.
I guess, and I know you guys talked about this on Tech Chatter, but I guess the question is this really good for the users? And you know, what does Apple get out of it? Do they get the fact that we're getting more stable apps that are going to take advantage of all the functionality of the device?
Well,
because you're using Apple's tools.
Those are really good questions. To answer them in order, I don't think the users are really going to notice. Now, will the users get anything out of it? That's a different question. Theoretically, I think they might, but I don't think they're really going to notice. Now, what they're going to get out of it can also kind of maybe address the second question. I think the reason behind this, everybody is assuming that this is a shot at Adobe.
Yeah, there's been a lot of that going on.
Yeah, and I think it probably is also a shot at Adobe. I think what it is it's a business decision, and it also takes the air out of Adobe sales. Well, darn. But
yeah,
what a horrible side effect for Apple. I'm speaking on Apple's behalf. I'm not saying I don't have anything necessarily against Adobe.
Oh yeah, I agree. Yeah.
But I think what they're doing actually is. We know about all the issues with the approval process to get an app into the store, and I think that the third-party cross-platform engines, I think, might make that a little bit more difficult because maybe they can't get into the source code as well and look for violations or for, I don't want to say viruses, but for stability issues, for compliance issues, things like that.
Yeah, just poor coding maybe, yeah.
Yeah, and stability is something that's very important to Apple. And now with the multitasking, and we know it's not actual true multitasking, it's multitasking services that can be accessed, which I think will be fine for the users. But from a development point of view, it is a little bit different.
Which I guess makes more sense to make it more strict and be using exactly these APIs we're giving you.
Yeah, this definitely makes multitasking something that Apple can allow without getting in the way of their stability.
Mm-hmm.
I would not have thought that they were going to have gone this way, but in hindsight, I think it's a good idea. I think this is exactly how they should implement it if they want to be able to maintain stability. So that's kind of cool, but I think that maybe some of these apps are going to have issues with that, and so that's another thing that they want to kind of take care of. And we talked a little bit on Tech Chatter about this, and the general consensus was that multi-platform apps have benefits and they have disadvantages. And one of the big benefits is that you can have a developer make an application for multiple platforms, for Windows and for Mac and Linux and the Palm Pre and the Windows 7 and the iPhone. And so you can have the same experience in the application across all of these different platforms. And that theoretically is a benefit.
Yeah, and from the developer standpoint, it's less costly to them.
Sure.
They're doing it once, it fits in all these platforms.
Well, and less costly makes it so that we actually get more apps, theoretically.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's also a benefit to the users, too, because there's a consistency across those different platforms if you're using that application on multiple platforms. I mean, it doesn't necessarily indicate consistency within the iPhone environment or within the Windows environment or things like that, but it does maintain consistency for that application in every environment.
Mm-hmm.
The downside is that they are generally either sluggish or unstable or both. An example, Adobe Air, which, I run Air for TweetDeck. If you don't know what Air is, it's kind of like Java. It's an engine that you download for Windows or for the Mac, and it lets you run multi-platform applications, such as the Twitter client TweetDeck. And that's my main Twitter client, and I like it, and I'm happy with it. But I have to concede that natively written Twitter applications like Tweety, they are a little snappier and they do run a little faster. And, that's a benefit. I continue using TweetDeck because it has features that I want that Tweety doesn't have yet. But you know, it's not quite the same thing. I've had problems with Java stuff over the years. The things that do run kind of slow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a lot of Mac games that are ports of Windows games. Like, you know, they've ported over The Sims, Blizzard. I'm not sure if Blizzard stuff like Diablo and such are natively written or if they've been ported. But I know, like, The Sims has been ported. The Force Unleashed has been ported. Things like that. And they just don't run quite the same. And it's not that the Mac can't run games, because the apps that are natively written for Mac run just fine. It's that these ports that have gone through and kind of taken that code and trying to force it to work in a different platform.
It's just not as efficient.
Right.
It can never be as efficient. So.
So, I mean, I think that's kind of where Apple's coming from. Is it a good move? I don't know. I guess it doesn't really bother me if the application is good. And I guess, you know, there's the other thing that this means that there are so many more Flash developers out there that they would probably get bombarded with a gazillion applications. And the bad side of that, theoretically, would be that we would then have to sort through even more fart apps and yeah, even more tip calculators. But on the other hand, we would have a larger selection of apps, too. So
The one thing that worries me about this, like, is long term, is Apple setting up a wall that they're going to start driving people away, and then we start getting fewer and fewer apps. Maybe they're good apps, but eventually, does everything just go away? You know, does everybody migrate to Android or to the new mobile phone 7 system thing?
I think here's what's going to happen. At least in the short term, a lot of the popular techie media is going to migrate to Android and to the Windows 7 phone and stuff like that. There have been a lot of... Molly Wood is an example of... You know, I love CNET and I love Buzz Out Loud and some of the other podcasts they do there. But Molly, personally, I'm not trying to slander her. She knows her stuff. You know, I've got respect for her. But sometimes she seems a little... flip-floppy on some things. Like, she went out and got an iPad and she tweeted that she was returning it because she didn't like this and that and how restrictive it was and the evil closed environment that it has. I'm thinking, wait a minute, Molly Wood, you're like one of the chief editors at CNET. You're trying to tell me that you didn't know walking into the Apple store that the iPad was a closed environment that you've been complaining about on the air for like a year and a half now?
Maybe she wasn't looking for any spoilers before it was released.
Oh, yeah, it's the spoiler issue.
Well, you know, I guess that brings up a good point, too, because I kind of come at this from the non-tech, non-developer standpoint. I consider myself a geek, but I'm not so geeky that I want to go out and, you know, install Linux on a machine and write code myself.
Right.
So for me, you know, the iPhone works because of what Apple's done for it. I think it's a great thing. And people that are less techie than me want that. You know, they don't want to have to learn how to program to use their phone. They don't want to have to worry about apps crashing and everything else. I think this is a good thing for the average phone person.
Yeah.
And I think more people are getting into, you know, so-called smartphones because of the iPhone. Before that, who used a smartphone? Just people in business.
Well, right. And, like, my wife loves her iPhone, but she would never go out and get, like, a Linux phone.
Right.
Or if she did, not to be fair, because I've got nothing against Linux either. It's a good operating... Well, it's actually multiple different flavors of operating systems. But she would be concerned about the end result, the experience. So if she got a Linux-based phone that had a good experience on it, she would be happy with that too. But she's comfortable with the iPhone, and she doesn't see any reason to move on. And when I talk to her about the whole closed, the walled garden, as people are calling it, she's like, okay, well, but why do I care?
Right.
So I think what you're going... Back to what you said, I think we're going to see a lot of the tech purists out there who are within the tech media kind of take a stand and put their foot down and say, I'm not putting up with it anymore. This is crap. This has gotten out of hand and I'm leaving and going somewhere else. And they're going to try to take people with them, and they will, you know, they'll take some people with them. And I think it will help Google, Android, and you know, some of the other competing phones. And again, that's not a bad thing. For all of you Apple people out there or iPhone purists who are worried about the Nexus One and, you know, stuff like that, don't be. Because the better those phones are, the more that drives Apple to innovate and make better iPhones. So it's not a bad thing. And honestly, the Nexus One is a good phone.
Yeah, the hardware looks great.
Yeah, so, but don't look at it as, you know, oh, well, this is the iPhone killer. It's not, because Apple can keep up, and they've proven that they can keep up, and so that's fine. So don't sweat it. In the long run, I don't think this is going to be too bad on the Apple Store either, because if a lot of developers leave, then that means that the remaining developers have less competition, and then they feel like they can raise their prices. And keep in mind, there's like, what, 6 million iPhones out there?
Yeah.
Or more? So there's a huge market, and there's still a lot of money to be made in the iPhone store. So developers are going to stay there, especially the seasoned veteran developers. And then, so if the other developers leave, then that creates less competition for the developers that stay. And when they continue to make money, you know, I think the other developers who have left are going to consider going back, because that's where the money is. And iPhone users I wish I had the statistic here with me and where it came from, but there have been reports that indicate that iPhone users tend to spend more money on apps than other smartphone users. So from a developer point of view, you know, it's not as easy as people might think to just write up an app and get on the App Store and make a lot of money from it. It's not easy, but it seems to be easier than on a lot of the other places. I mean, it's kind of hard. You know, the App Store still has problems too. Of all the things that Apple has not really done well with, browsing the App Store is not the same as browsing for music. It's a different. It needs to be a different paradigm.
It's painful.
It is.
There's just too much stuff to see. It changes with, you know, what they have as their hot apps or their featured apps, you know, almost every day. You can't keep up with it. It's just there's too much out there, and there's just too much, you know, noise.
You know, there was an RSS feed. There were two, actually. One is for newly released apps, and there's another one for newly updated apps. And a year or two ago, back when there weren't as many apps being released every day, I used to keep up with it. And even then, I was getting like 1,000 posts a day.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, I can't keep up with this all the time. So yeah. I finally stopped subscribing to it. And that was back before it got as bad as it is right now. So they can't just really, you know, list every new release. And you can only, basically, you can browse that front page and that's it. Anything else has to be searched.
Yep.
You know, you can do the see more for the charts to see like maybe the top 100 or things like that. But if you don't know what you're looking for, you're stuck. And Apple needs to find some way to make the browsing experience better. Because honestly, I would totally, you know, I browse for music and I would totally go in and browse for iPhone apps. And, you know, there have been times where I've just been browsing in through the front page or down at the bottom, you know, apps people who purchased this app have also purchased these other apps. And I browsed through that a little bit and I found some real gold mines. Some real gems.
Yeah, that's probably the only way I've done it too, where you see, you know, other people have bought this app.
Right.
But you see, I don't even browse the music store that often though, because I tend to hear about stuff and then search for it.
Yeah.
Or I'll see a release that, hey, so and so's put a new album out. But I even find the iTunes store hard for music to just purely browse. It's not like going to a record store like we used to.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I'm thinking a lot of hopping from artist to artist, and it's kind of easy to browse what the artist has, but. Again, I guess you still do kind of have to know what you're looking for, so that's a good point. But that's something that Apple really needs to fix, and if they did, everybody would be happier. The users would be happier.
Yeah.
Oh, totally a game changer. And they'd make more money.
So, well, you know, I don't know. The notes about the Apple store for hardware becoming social, I guess, came out this week. And at first I read that and thought, oh, the iTunes store being social, that'd be different. So if they could integrate some of that functionality to the iTunes store, that may be a way to make that happen.
Was this that thing about integrating it with Facebook?
I don't know if it was Facebook or not. I thought it was their own social scheme they were doing in the Apple store.
I might have missed that.
So
interesting. Well, that might help out a lot. I mean, if there's a way that you can follow people And you know, there's a great website out there. I don't mind mentioning them because I don't consider them a direct competition for AppChatter necessarily. But there's a site called Appalicious where you can go in and if you choose to, you can allow it to read the index file from iTunes to get a list of all the apps you have, and so mm-hmm. you can kind of post your app library to the site so people can see what you've downloaded, and you can check off, and you know, if you've got some porn app in there you don't want people to know about, you can uncheck it, or I don't even know if there are porn apps out there, but yeah, so you're safe, Lou.
Thanks.
But so you can upload so people can see, you know, how many apps you've got and what you liked and what you didn't like, and you can rate them. So it's almost more of an iPhone social networking type of site. If they could integrate that into the iTunes store.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
Because you could follow people, you could see what they have, see what they're picking up lately. Yeah, that'd be great.
Exactly. And if there are people you find, it's kind of like movie reviews. I've found that it helps to have certain people, certain journalists or reviewers that you tend to agree with. Because that way, if you want to go see a movie and you're like, well, you know, some people say it's good, some people say it's bad, I'm going to go to X and see what he said because he generally likes the same things I do. You know, all the better in this case.
Exactly, yeah.
So,
that's right. Why people listen to us.
Now, you put something in the show notes here about, and I read a little bit about it, I didn't delve too deeply in it, but apparently there's something about a car kit.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot talked about. I guess somebody has uncovered this in the developer's kit for iPhone OS 4.0, that there is some hooks in there, I guess, that they can work with an Apple-branded car kit. Now, I don't know if this is just a speaker and a screen somewhere in the car or what it is, but the concept sounds very intriguing. I think this would be a nice way to be able to integrate your phone into your driving experience 100%. Because right now, I still bring an iPod in the car. I plug into a dock. Mm-hmm. And I have my iPhone with a Bluetooth headset. But if I could have that whole thing be seamless, where I could listen to music, yeah. You know, hear when a call came in, let it dim the music down and get my call, I think that'd be fantastic.
Well, you know, more and more states and cities are going with hands-free laws for telephones while you're driving. And, you know, sure, you've got the earpieces and the headsets and things like that, but they're, you know, you have to remember to keep them charged. Some of them will charge in the car, some won't. You have to make sure you have it with you. If it doesn't charge in the car and you left it at home on the charger, it's
right.
Yeah, you know, having something built into your car would definitely be a benefit. And I know there are some vehicles coming out now that already have Bluetooth built in for the purpose of integrating the hands-free with the car itself. So the audio from the call comes through the speakers, and there's a microphone in the steering wheel or something like that. And yeah,
those systems
awesome.
Are pretty nice. A buddy of mine just picked up a Toyota truck, and it's got integration with his phone, but not full integration. He still has to put in, I think, 16 numbers into the truck that it will use the phone to dial, but he doesn't talk to the truck and have it dial from the phone. So it's kind of a halfway system. I hear about the Ford Sync system, and I think that sounds really intriguing.
A friend of mine has that, but he's not really an iPhone guy, so he's just kind of starting to play around with it a little bit. He got a Palm Pre, which he was very excited about, and I don't have the heart to tell him that Palm is now up for sale. But
it's a sad day in the world of handheld computing.
Yeah. Well, you know, Palm has been around for a long time. You could argue that Palm kind of innovated PDAs. Apple tried originally with the Newton, which was way ahead of its time, but it kind of fizzled out, and then Palm came along and really kind of carried the industry for about, well, I want to say almost a decade, almost.
Yeah, I was going to say it was quite a while, because when the first Palm Pilot came out, that was probably like 80, or I said 95, maybe? 94?
Nah, it was a little later than that. It was late 90s. I got my first one in 2000, and I think it was 3 models old. But it wasn't the very first model. So
okay, because I think I had one of the original Palm Pilots must have been 98, maybe.
Okay, yeah, I think that was about the time they came out, and they had a really good run.
Yeah.
And, you know, for a long time, that was the thing to have, but, you know, they always needed to integrate it with the phone, and nobody really came along and did that until, you know, well, fairly recently. I mean, I guess in the world of tech, it's not that recent, but
yeah
so it's kind of sad to see Palm go by the wayside here, but, you know,
they couldn't keep up. Show, so.
Yeah. No, we're fortunately we're covering something that's far more successful.
Yes.
But, you know, the car kit, I got to say, I don't know anybody who has an iPhone that doesn't use it in the car. Because you've got your music and you've got your phone in one device. And you've got GPS and map. So it's the perfect piece of electronics to have in your car. And if Apple could come out with some way to integrate it into the car itself, that would be awesome. Because I got to tell you, like I went out and got a... I've got the car I'm using most of the time, it's actually my wife's car, a PT Cruiser, which I can't stand, by the way. And it does not have a tape deck, and it does not have an auxiliary jack input. So I have to use an FM transmitter. Now, the area I live, there are no free FM channels. The FM dial is completely saturated.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, like, when I drive to school, I've got a really long commute to school. And fortunately, I only go once a week, but it's like 3 hours, if you take into consideration traffic, to get to school each way.
Oof.
I have to change to at least three different stations through the course of the drive. And even then, I can barely make out my podcasts and audiobooks over the static. So, and this is on, and I've gone through probably five or six different FM transmitters. And I even dropped almost $100 on the one where you plug it in and it's got like this flexible arm with the mount and it charges and all this kind of stuff. And it's really nice, but it just, it's not powerful enough. And then I found on Amazon, they have an iRiver FM transmitter, and I forget the model number. It's something like AFT100 or something. It's $25. It used to be $50. $25. This is the best FM transmitter in the world. So people out there, if you're looking for an FM transmitter for your iPhone, this is the one to get. I can tune it. With my old one, the expensive ones, any of my old ones, I could find the weakest station, and I still could not get enough power to actually be able to hear what I was listening to, at least not clearly. With this one, the iRiver one, I can find the strongest radio station in the area. I can play it over top of that.
Wow.
And it's better than my old ones were on the weakest stations.
Well, that's very impressive.
Yes. I've got no problems with this one at all. It is absolutely awesome. It's got an LCD display on the front with three different presets. The only problem is there's no, if it just had like a little USB thing in the side or something that you could plug it in to charge, there is no way to charge the iPhone. And it also doesn't give you any place to sit the iPhone. Yeah. So I've got a splitter now with one plug for the FM transmitter. There's another available plug, and then there's two USB plugs on it, and I've got a sync cable plugged into that. But then I still don't have any place to actually mount the iPhone. So you've got three problems in a car, right? You've got the audio, which might have to be an FM transmitter, and you've got the power, because you don't want to drain the batteries. If you can charge it in the car while you're there, then great. And then you've got where to physically put the phone. If Apple can address all three of those, I don't care what it costs. I don't care if I have to take it down to Best Buy and have it installed in the car. Whatever, I'm getting it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to be some sort of a dock connector piece that's going to hold the phone.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's going to charge then or if it's going to use Bluetooth to get the stuff into your stereo. But you're right. Something would be nice to be able to do all that for you. Because right now, like I said, I just put my iPhone, you know, in a little cubbyhole somewhere and put the headset on.
Yeah.
I do have a kind of tricky system that fools my radio into thinking that the iPod is a Honda CD changer. So it works through the radio and does a very good job of that, but it doesn't work with the iPhone.
That's not bad. I wonder if there's a way to do that with mine.
There's a couple companies out there that you can search for. They build stuff that fools factory radios into thinking you have a CD changer.
Right, because it uses the auxiliary input in the back of the stereo, I assume, which would normally go out to a multi-disc.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, moving on. Like I said at the beginning of the show, we don't really have a whole lot of iPad stuff to cover this week, which I'm sure those of you who are sick of hearing about the iPad are pretty happy about. So instead, we have a list of apps to review, but first let's talk about the one that is the most newsworthy this week. The Opera Mini Browser was released.
It's been all over the news.
All over the news. Yeah, it is. Now, to be clear, It is a proxy browser. The way it works is when you look up a website, it goes to the Opera Mini server. It downloads the site to that server. It converts it into a format that's easier to read on your phone and sends it back to you. Now, they claim that they have found a way to make this way, way, way fast. It actually uses a Safari web browser engine, apparently, based on what I've been told.
Okay.
But it just it's this proxy system. And
now it's the same way Opera Mini works on other devices. I mean, this isn't okay. new for the iPhone. That proxy server is not new for the iPhone.
Okay, which is a good thing, probably, because they've had time to work with it and get it up and running and everything. So, now, the tests indicate that the speed on this is up to 10 times faster than Safari.
I think the keywords are up to.
Yeah. What's your experience been on it?
I haven't. I mean, I tried it. I downloaded it. And, of course, there's always that little bit of initial, okay, this is different. Do I like it or not? So it took a little bit to get used to it. And I think the interface is not bad. It felt maybe a little snappier on some websites, but most websites, I couldn't really tell a difference. Now, I didn't time anything, but most websites loaded, I thought, in the same amount of time. I think the interface itself, the darker colors makes it feel smaller. I don't know if that's just my imagination, but the screen real estate for the website looks smaller. And yeah. I think one problem it had was when it brings up a page, everything is so tiny you can't even read it.
Yeah.
And I didn't seem to have that same experience on Safari. Safari doesn't shrink it like Opera did.
Yeah, it's kind of quirky in how it handles things, especially text. First of all, you pointed out the screen real estate. There is a tab bar, which could be a good thing. You know, I've not used the tab bar, but I hear it's a lot easier than using Safari's interface for switching from window to window. And that could be.
I can see it being a little faster, I guess, switching.
Yeah. And I've also been told that I gave up on it before I got to this, but I've been told that you can disable it, too.
Okay.
So
I didn't know that either.
Yeah. So that's a benefit. One other thing I liked is on the front page, they have something called Speed Dial. And rather than a bookmark system, I think it's also got bookmarks, but what you can do is there's a grid of basically web-based buttons that you can bookmark different sites to. So when you first load it up, your homepage is a grid of different hot buttons, like a speed dial on a phone, and you just tap the site you want to go to and it pulls it right up.
Yeah, I think that was pretty slick.
Yeah, yeah. So that's I like that from an interface point of view. That's good. Performance-wise, I tried a handful of sites, and the sites that were kind of mainstream, like CNN.com, where else did I go? I think Yahoo.com and a few others. Those came up pretty quickly. So, those were okay. But there were a lot that didn't. I tried RandomChatter.com, and it was actually slower. Hmm. And it did not display as well. I tried flickchart.com, which is run by Nathan and Jeremy. Nathan is one of our hosts on Lost Chatter. And it's a very popular movie review website. Well, it's a movie ranking website as opposed to a movie rating website. You should go check it out. Anyway, flickchart.com, it wouldn't let me log in.
Hmm.
Every time I would get halfway through typing my password, it would lock me out of the password screen.
That's a problem.
Yeah. So finally, you know, I closed the application a couple times and came back in. I got in. And so then I was using the site and I tested it compared to Safari. This was not a scientific test, but the graphics did not load as quickly as they did in Safari. And as far as bias goes, I want to point out, I'm not a big Safari fan. I use Firefox on pretty much any computer I use. I don't use Safari on the Mac. Excuse me. So I wanted to like Opera Mini. I just want to point that out in case anybody's wondering about bias. Mm-hmm. I was kind of hoping this would work out, but it didn't. I went to some other sites, and I could see, I'm trying to think, maybe it was Amazon.com. And what it does, if the text is really small, then like when you're zoomed out, you get like these little squiggly line looking things, right? So if you tap the screen, it zooms in, and then you can read the text. It doesn't use the pinch to zoom. So you can't zoom in and out at variable levels.
Yeah, it's either all or nothing.
Right. And the other thing is, on Amazon through Safari, I could still read the text when it was zoomed out. I could still make it out enough that I didn't need to zoom in.
Right. It's almost like when it zooms out to the point where you can't read the text, it's just like a gray line. You know, yeah, it's supposed to be text, but you can't read it.
Yeah, it's like it's not even trying. Exactly. Which, you know, that probably contributes to the speed, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. I think that if you're using Edge, then it's probably good because you're not going to have the 3G speeds, and I think this will benefit you. But if you've got a good, solid 3G connection, I can't, you know, all of the tests say it's faster, but I haven't seen it.
Mm. Now, let me ask you this. You said you wanted to like this browser.
Yes, I did.
And I guess I'm from the school. I don't understand why there's this whole big need and desire for people to have a second browser on the iPhone. I feel Safari's fine.
Yeah. Well, so, I think people feel like it gives them choices and it opens up that walled garden that we talked about a little bit.
Okay.
I think... Well, and I mean, there is some different functionality, too. Not everybody likes the way Apple designs their interfaces. And you know, honestly, there are some things I would do differently. The tab bar across the top, some people like that. And again, like I said, I like the speed dial thing.
Mm-hmm.
I would totally use that. But I don't know. I guess I'm not really itching for a different browser. Honestly, for all of the things I've used, again, I've used Palm Pilots going back to, you know, when they were still called Palm Pilots before Pilot Pen sued them and made them change their name to just Palm. I've used the Windows Mobile browsers. I've used third-party browsers on the mobile Windows Mobile system. Safari has been such a good experience on a phone compared to what I'm used to. I'm not even looking for anything better. I'm happy. Yeah, I don't have Flash, but, you know, I'm also not going to have Flash on Opera Mini.
Right.
So, what,
and you know. You're not going to have HTML5 on Opera Mini.
Yeah, that's another good point.
So, I mean, I guess I'm in the same boat you are. I've used browsers on, you know, my wife's BlackBerry and so forth over the years, and it's like, you get the iPhone with Safari, and you're like, wow, this is like browsing on my desktop.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, and hey, you know, another thing about the Opera Mini is that if you are in a different app and you click on a link, it's still going to take you into Safari.
Yeah, Apple's not going to change that.
Right. So, and there's no way to modify that in any way. So, you're kind of stuck. Yeah. So. Oh, hey, everybody. Before we go any further, it looks like Jeff is here to join us. Hey, Jeff, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. What's up?
Hey, I'm sorry I didn't get you sooner. For those of you listening wondering why Jeff is cutting in halfway through the show, I kind of screwed up the notifications about when we're recording tonight, so that's my bad. But
it's just because I'm rude and I like to cut in on things in the middle.
Yeah, you know, Jeff's just like that.
Yeah.
But that's okay. We love him anyway. So, Jeff... I lied. I hate you because you have an iPad, don't you?
Well, there's one reason why we hate him.
Yeah.
What? Is that just because I have an iPad and you don't?
Yeah, pretty much. That's about exactly all it takes right now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I understand.
I mean, we're not bitter or anything.
No, yeah, not
absolutely.
At all.
Yeah, I have no idea what the first half of the show was about, so you guys could have just been talking crap about me the whole time.
No, we should have, though. That's okay. After you hang up, we'll talk crap about you.
Okay,
we'll
make there you it. Go. Yeah, that's all right.
No, we were just we were talking about the delay of the international release a little bit. We talked a little bit more about the some of the iPhone OS 4.0 stuff, like the Apple branded car kit. A little bit about the Flash discussion. We didn't really want to rehash that too much. We talked about Opera Mini.
Yes.
Which, by the way, we didn't mention this, but it's free and it's for the iPhone only right now. I cannot imagine using this on an iPad. Have you tried the Opera Mini browser, Jeff?
I have not.
Okay.
Because I don't really, I guess, get it, what the whole attraction is for a new browser. I don't have any problems with Safari on the iPhone.
See, Jeff's on my side.
And I think it's good that Apple's allowing another browser. I think that speaks a lot for Apple. I think that's a good thing. However, I think somebody I saw somebody tweet the other day, it works on like 70% of the sites and the other 30% don't work. I'm like, why is this such a great thing if 30% of the sites don't work on it? I don't get it.
And you can't do HTML5 video.
Yeah.
And your links aren't going to load it up. I mean, here's the thing. I pointed out that if you're on Edge, it might be faster.
Right, because you can turn off images, which would be nice.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And so that's, if you don't care about cool images. Thing.
If you're stuck out in the middle of nowhere, something like that, I can see using it then. But yeah. That's a rare circumstance for me.
But yeah, that's the thing, though. If you're not in a limited environment, I can't imagine this being any better. And like I was just saying, my own speed tests, as non-scientific as they were, didn't indicate it was really any faster. At least not... Okay, you know what? To be fair, my tests were done over Wi-Fi. Now that I think about it, maybe that's a factor. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But... Yeah, so we've got some apps to review, but I don't know that you've actually used any of them. So while we've got you here, why don't you give us real quick? I know we were going to try to stay away from iPad stuff, and listeners out there, I promise we'll make this quick, and we will get back to our app reviews. But Jeff, I want to know, what are your impressions of the iPad so far?
I love it. And I'll tell you the kind of spot that it took in my life. I'm a video editor and a video producer by trade, so
okay.
I am tied to a Mac Pro most of the time. And while I quote unquote own a MacBook Pro, I quote unquote gave it to my wife. So she uses that most of the time, and so most of my work is at my office at my main tower. So the iPad fills that hole for me of being able to move and being able to do a lot of stuff. I got it because I wanted to be able to do productivity and email and internet on the go. So I really, really like it. I use my iPhone a lot less, and I prefer to surf the internet on it versus almost any computer, the MacBook Pro or my Mac Pro.
Wow, that's saying a lot.
It's a really, really nice experience. And so I've been really impressed with that. I've not been overly blown away with like the email, and I've experienced the same learning curve typing on it that I had to the iPhone. You know, it's going to be a little hunt and peck when you start and a little bit of frustrating, but you can get much faster with it. So I'm getting better at it. But presentation wise, I mean, it's awesome. I am reading on it too. I bought a book on it. Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
Yeah. And, I've heard a lot about that.
Yeah. It's very interesting. It's not a book podcast, but the reading experience on it is very, very natural to me. Mm-hmm. I think the inclusion of the ability to turn the page, maybe as trivial as that sounds, is really nice for me. I actually like to go up there and I don't just like to tap on the right side of the screen. I actually go and flip that page with my finger. That helps me kind of get into that. So overall, I love it more every day. I'm very excited about it, and I'm happy I made the purchase.
I hate you.
Yeah, I was going to say, you probably should have told Jeff that I'm trying to hold off till version 2, so downplay it a little bit.
Right.
Now I want one even more.
Yeah. Right.
My brother's in the same situation. He really wants one, but he wants the camera in it. He wants to be able to video chat, which for me was never a big deal. Like I just still don't understand the fascination people have with walking around video chatting, because I don't think that video chatting is near as integrated in people's lives as it is in, like, say, Japan. It's very common in Japan, but it's very rare over here.
You know, honestly, I think it's probably a younger generational thing. I think a lot of kids are more interested in it. If people don't have to look at me, I don't want to force them to.
Right. I don't walk around all the time camera ready.
Right.
Right. So I don't get that. And the only thing that I really wanted the iPad to have was multitasking. I was disappointed a little bit when it came out and it didn't have multitasking. And of course, now with, OS 4.0, that'll be taken care of.
It's coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, we've talked before on the show a little bit about the various things about the iPad. So I think the people who have been listening to us probably already have an idea of what's cool about it and things like that. So I want to ask you a couple of real quick questions about actually using your experience on it so far. You mentioned the keyboard. So if you have it in landscape mode and you're typing on it,
right?
Do you have to kind of hunt and peck? Can you kind of touch type a little bit on it?
Well, no. My natural inclination is to type the proper way. I can type 60 to 70 words per minute once I get warmed up.
Okay.
So
on
I can
an iPad or on a real keyboard, you mean?
Yeah, on a real keyboard, I can go.
Okay.
And so with this, I mean, it feels a lot very similar. It's like a little bit of a compressed laptop keyboard is pretty much how it feels. The biggest trick for me has been that they've moved some keys around a little bit, and you kind of have to relearn a little bit. And so some shift, because they don't have that number row at the top, so some shift options like exclamation points and things like that are moved a little bit.
Yeah.
And so, but
now I noticed they did add the period and the comma back in
right,
there.
Right. They're there. There's no tab key. There, but sometimes that inner button changes a lot. Or, you know, the return key, sometimes it's go, sometimes that acts as the tab key. So that I'm still getting used to that. But and the biggest thing is, you know, you're so used to resting your wrists on your keyboard or on your desk or on your laptop or whatever. You really can't do that, obviously, on the iPad. So you really, right. And if you do, you tend to rest it right on the space bar. So you have to learn to keep your wrists up and kind of dance on the keyboard a little bit.
Well, I imagine if you're going to do a lot of data entry, it might benefit you to grab a Bluetooth keyboard.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that if you're really consistently going to be using this for note taking in class, or for if you're going to be writing screenplays on it or something like that, then I think you'd want to get a more comfortable keyboard. But I think for the data entry that you can do on the go and things like that, I think it's very capable, and with a little bit of learning curve, I think you'll be right on top of it.
Okay. A couple of other questions. Have you gotten any accessories for it?
I have not. I've really been kind of, I've just got the box pretty much, and I was actually, you know, looking at iLounge's accessory roundup a little bit earlier tonight, just kind of thinking, which way do I want to go, that kind of thing. So I'm accessory free at the moment.
I was going to be really mean and say, Eric's got accessories for his already.
I have accessories for mine already. Yeah, that's a sad thing.
Doesn't have the iPad yet, but...
No, well, you know, because once they started, I was debating whether or not to get the keyboard dock or the a separate dock and a Bluetooth keyboard, because one of my main things is I want to be able to take notes in it at school. And after learning that the keyboard dock is not all that portable because of the extra plastic that kind of sticks up. It doesn't really fit in a bag very well. I figured, okay, well, no problem. I'll get the dock and the keyboard. Well, then, like a day or two after it came out, and they started saying, yeah, all of these things are getting delayed until like mid to late April, maybe early May. I'm like, well, crap. So I went out and I ordered the dock and the case.
Gotcha.
So I've got my dock. My case should be arriving tomorrow, and I wanted to ask you about that because I've been hearing some kind of mediocre things about the case. Actually, some bad things from some people.
Yeah, I've heard mixed reviews. I've heard that I've personally handled the case. I've seen an iPad in the case, and so I've handled it. I've played with it. There's a part of me that wishes it was leather. It's not. Mm-hmm. There's a part of me that wishes it was a little bit tighter fitting, but I can understand why it's not, because you still want to have a little bit of flexibility to take it in and out. And so I think it's very nice in the fact, the way the functionality of the case, it's not just a case, you know, it's able to stand up the iPad in landscape mode and then portrait mode. And so you really have some flexibility with the way it kind of flips around on it. And the kind of Apple nerd in me likes it. It's Apple branded. You know, I don't like to hide that Apple logo. So it's just the truth. But yeah. I don't know. I've heard that it the edges is what I've heard, that it kind of catches or something. I don't think anybody's had it long enough to be able to speak to its durability, though.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people are also complaining about the fact that the kind of rubbery material on it picks up dirt and dust really bad.
Huh. I haven't heard that, though.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll be able to give a review of it before I get the iPad even. Yay!
So you're just gonna carry around the case for a little while.
We were talking about that. Yeah, I'm just gonna, you know, go down to the mall, walk around with the case.
He's gonna get used to it, you know, see how it feels to carry
it. Yeah. Yeah, make everybody jealous.
Hey, can I see your iPad?
No, you can't. You can't see it. It's just for me.
Yeah.
I'll tell everybody I got the stealth model.
Yeah,
so you can't even see it, can you?
Emperor's new clothes.
Sorry, yeah. You can't see it unless you're wearing a black turtleneck and jeans. I'm sorry.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I hate to do this, but we kind of have to move on to our reviews and stuff. Jeff, why don't you think about, I assume you've downloaded some software for it by now at least.
Yes.
Okay, why don't you think of a couple of things that maybe you've used and could recommend. Okay. One thing real quick before we get to the rest of the reviews, have you tried Warpgate by chance?
I have not.
Okay,
well then I'm a loser.
Well, I don't know. It's one of the pricier ones, so I guess we won't ask you about that. I'll start out with that one, I guess, and then I'll move on to Lou. This app is available both for the iPhone and the iPad. It came out for the iPad first. It's now available for the iPhone. It's by Freeverse, who, of course, is one of the veteran iPhone app developers out there. It uses the Plus network. Here's the catch. It's a little bit pricey. The iPad version $7.99. The iPhone version is $4.99. That being said, the general consensus around the internet about this game has been very favorable, and I can see why. It's kind of a space trading game along the lines of, there was an old Space Trader game for like the Palm Pilot and Windows Mobile. It's a little bit like, a lot of people are comparing it to games like Elite and Privateer. So you own a ship, and then you go from planet to planet buying commodities at low prices, selling them at other places at high prices. You can upgrade your ship. You can upgrade the weapons and the shields and buy new ships, things like that. There are different groups, different military groups. There's pirates, things like that. So there's factions with which you can build reputation. There's missions that are kind of like quests and things like that. It's kind of cool. The graphics, first of all, are phenomenal. The interface, everything about the way the ships move, it's two-dimensional as far as the gameplay. It's got a three-dimensional look to it, but you know, basically the movement of the ships and everything is two-dimensional, which kind of makes the gameplay a little bit easier. But the graphics are beautiful. The sounds are good. The interface is adequate. I don't have any complaints about the interface, but I didn't like ooh and ah over it either. It's fine as far as like the menu system and the buttons and everything. Using it is very simple. You tap where you want to go. If you want it to just move in a direction indefinitely, you drag in that direction. There are little indicators that go around the outside of the screen for where different planets are and stuff. So if you want to go straight to a planet, you just tap the little circle with the arrow that goes to that planet and it just takes off. Combat is a little simple. When you enter combat with the ship, you've got different weapons, and you hit the button for each one of the weapons, and then it will take a certain number of seconds for that button to become available again while the, you know, the missiles reload, so to speak, which is kind of simple. But on the other hand, it's better than the old, you know, Space Trader type games, so I can't really complain too much. The only complaint I have, I'd like to see multiplayer of some sort. I've not messed around with the Plus network to know what it brings to the table. I assume it's maybe just leaderboards and maybe some achievements and stuff. But I gotta say, despite the price tag, I would highly recommend it. I imagine it would look beautiful on an iPad. People are calling this the must-buy iPad application. That being said, there's a bit of a warning, too. If you don't like this type of game, you're gonna find it boring. Some people feel it's a bit of a grind. I haven't felt that way so far. But some people will. So if you have a very short attention span and don't have a lot of patience for things that might be like that, you know, look into the game a little bit further maybe before picking it up.
Is there an upgrade path for if you bought the iPhone version and your iPad comes in a couple weeks, you can upgrade? Or?
And that's the thing, there is not. So if you have an iPad or if you're holding out to get an iPad soon, I would hold out and buy this on the iPad and not the iPhone. This is not a universal app, and it looks like it would be gorgeous on the iPad. So I will be honest. I think this is one of the... We get a lot of promo codes to try out different apps to review here at App Chatter. And I want to point out, you know, if something sucks, we're going to say it sucks. I mean, if we lose integrity on what we're doing, nobody's going to listen to us, and we're going to go away, and that's going to be very sad. So just because we get free promo codes, it ain't like we're going to say something's good when it's not. Okay, I just want to clear that up right off the bat.
Exactly.
Yeah, our view is it sucks until proven otherwise. Oh, wait, sorry.
Yeah, well, no, seriously. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there, and, you know, money is limited And I'm not just going to recommend people go out and buy everything out there that moves. And like I said, I've got some complaints about this. I'd like to see multiplayer, and I don't really like having two different versions of it. I'd like to see a universal app, and it's a little bit pricey. I think the iPad version's probably reasonable at $7.99, but $4.99 for the iPhone version's a little steep. I'd maybe like to see $2.99, but I can't complain. I like the game a lot. I would probably not have paid $4.99 for the iPhone version, but I would pay $7.99 for the iPad easily.
Yeah, so. I think that's pretty much in line with most iPad pricing right now. iPad yeah. apps are running higher, and I think that's totally justified. I think there are two reasons for that. Obviously, the iPad offers you a lot more functionality and visual stimulation, so on and so forth. Right. Two, I think that there was such a rush to the bottom when the App Store first launched for the iPhone. I think developers are kind of standing their ground a little bit more, and you have some apps that are, you know, $7, $8, $9, $20 on here, and I think they're going to try to hold that ground.
When you say rush to the bottom, for those who don't know what you're talking about, when the iPhone first came out, there were a lot of apps that were, you know, in the $10 range and such, and then a lot of developers came out with, you know, 99-cent apps.
Right. Yeah. Everybody's trying to just go lower to go, well, I can make this Twitter app for $2.99. Well, I'm going to make it for $99. I'm going to do it for free.
Exactly.
Yada, yada, yada.
And now it's kind of normal, but at the time it was surprising. You're like, wait a minute, 99 cents when everything else is $5 or $10? This is awesome. So, right. And we might see a little bit of that with this. But, you know, I also got to say, like, Jeff, you weren't at the beginning of the show. You didn't hear this. But I pointed out that I must have downloaded between 20 and 30 apps already for my iPad just by kind of monitoring news groups and, like, RSS feeds and stuff to see what's popular and what's on sale and what's free. And I think I've spent a total of about $1.99. I think I paid for Words with Friends when it was on sale.
And that's it. I've spent more than that, though.
No, I'm going to spend more than that. Well, I mean, I've got to get iWork for school. I mean, that alone. Yeah. But yeah, I'm going to spend more. But I just want to point out that there are still a lot of free stuff out there. And there's a lot of universal apps, too. I've got a lot of things that have upgraded automatically.
Yes.
And that's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
But anyway, Lou, did you get a chance to try out any of the things we have in the show notes here?
I did. Tried a few of them. Okay. Stickbound comes to mind. Was one of the first ones I played with a little bit. Very simple game. It's an iPhone game. I don't think it's an iPad version of it yet.
No.
It does have the networking function of OpenFaint, so you can kind of get leaderboards and post your scores up. Mm-hmm. It's a side-scrolling... I don't know how you explain it. It's a side-scrolling map game where you're bouncing from obstacle to obstacle, but you're not jumping. You're using a automatic pole vault, maybe?
It's a stick that comes out of... Well, it's in space, so we'll say it's like some type of an energy
propulsion
line. Because to say that this thing just comes out of your character's butt would be a little
weird. Yeah, it does have that kind of look to it. But it's actually a pretty cool game. It's very fun. I find myself picking up and just playing it for a few minutes here and there. It's not something I'm going to get wrapped up into for 20 minutes at a time. But it's fun. Your character kind of bounces around. It uses ragdoll physics, so the guy just kind of drops onto the next obstacle and he'll slide off, or
which is kind of weird.
Well, the weird part for me is he slides off, but then he kind of grabs back up again. I'm like, how does he pull himself back up?
But yeah,
the force.
There you go.
Exactly.
Yeah. But all in all, I thought it was a very cool game to play. It was only 99 cents.
Yeah.
So I think for the if you're into that casual kind of gaming, I think it's a nice little game to play.
Yeah, I mean for 99 cents, it's it's kind of like the opposite of Hook Champ.
I haven't played Hook Champ.
You're automatically running along, and then there's a gap, and so you tap on the ceiling, and it shoots out like an Indiana Jones style whip, and then you swing across the gap, and you let go, and then you keep running until you get the next gap or obstacle. So instead of grabbing things and pulling yourself up over gaps, this is you're tapping down and you're pushing. Now you have a little bit more control because you can control the angle based on where you tap. But you're also not running either. You're just kind of flopping.
Yeah, you're just pole vaulting.
Yeah, but it's kind of fun though. You know, 99 cents. Yeah, why not? If you're looking for that type of casual game, this isn't bad.
Yep.
Yeah. What else were you able to try? Anything else on the list here?
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with Ozone. Ozone, I thought was a very cool game. My only problem with it was, let's back up and talk about what it is first, I guess. It's a ball roller game, but it's not really a ball. You've got a bubble, mm-hmm. and you use a little joystick on the left-hand side to show which way you're going to point air out of the bubble, and that propels you in that direction. You bounce off the walls. You've got to avoid obstacles. There's spikes. There's saw blade things that come at you, all kinds of stuff that would, you know, puncture your bubble. And when you run out of air, you run out of life.
Right.
So you want to avoid those things. I kept finding myself wanting to tilt the iPad, like, or the iPhone, like it was Labyrinth, because I wanted to roll that ball from side to side, and I'm so used to Labyrinth that I kept wanting to do that. But other than that, it was a cool game. I can see a lot of gameplay in this thing.
You know, I don't really like a lot of the accelerometer games. I mean, I recognize them as well-made, fun games. They're just not my thing. I prefer to be able to hold it whatever angle I want to. Well, I mean, you know, I'm juggling a baby half the time, too, so that's, you know, that's an issue for me.
That's a challenge.
That's an accelerometer game all of its own.
Exactly. Truly is.
Yeah,
when you get that one upside down, it's a whole new level of interesting. No, but this, I thought the controls were good, though.
Very easy to play.
Yeah, it was responsive.
I thought the aiming of the shooting was a little difficult, because when you get certain power-ups, you can fire missiles and so forth out of your bubble.
Yeah, I did not get that quite that far.
Well, I only went in. That was in a tutorial.
Oh,
yes. Yeah, I tend to read directions and play tutorials. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm funny that way.
No, and actually the tutorial is pretty good too. Yeah. I mean, this is just a really well designed game all around. I think the physics of it are good. It's got kind of space physics, so if you let a little bit of air out of one side of your bubble, you propel yourself and you continue moving until you hit the brake button
or an object.
Or another object, and some objects you can, you know, bounce off of, and you can bounce off of walls and things, or until you burst air in a different direction. So the physics of the game are pretty cool. The graphics are nice. I love the music. I really don't care for music in the game. One of the first things I do in a game is shut the music off.
I did turn the music off. I haven't even heard it.
No, this one isn't bad at all.
Okay, I'll try.
I actually kind of like this one. It's a little pricey again, $4.99, and it's an iPhone app only. There's no iPad version. But this, you know, I can't really complain about the price on this one. This one's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's a casual game, so it's different from Warpgate in the sense that it's a little less involved, but there's also no grind to it. And for all of the ball roller type of games, I enjoyed this one more than I have a lot of others. So, you know, $4.99, I think it's right on the cusp of maybe being too much, but I would not regret paying $5 for this game because it's a type of game I think you'd come back to over and over and over again.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say it's a good price for it. I mean, I think we've been spoiled by 99 cent apps for a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, quality apps are going to be a little bit more money.
Well, and you can tell that they put a lot of time and effort into this because it shows. You know, it's a good quality.
I would like
game.
To have a little more screen real estate. That's why I think if they make this a universal app, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. What else do we have? Something interesting real quick. I just want to throw it out there. Microsoft's Tag Reader, which is free. There's a lot of talk about these little square tags. There's a name for them. I forget what they are, but they're like barcodes, but they are, they're not just the straight bars. They're like square graphics that you can fit a lot more data in. And you can read them with your iPhone or any mobile phone, actually. This Tag Reader works in various different phones. And I don't really see a whole lot of point to them, but I got a copy of Entertainment Weekly this week. And you could use that to view trailers of all of the different summer movies that they were covering. This is their big summer movie preview. And, you know, I thought that's kind of cool. On the other hand, I'd rather just be reading Entertainment Weekly on an iPad and just be able to tap
and go right to it.
Yeah. So
I see it being useful if you're out and about. No, I haven't actually seen these tags anywhere though myself.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not that cool if nobody's using them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
I mean, I can see if you're in a city maybe, and there's, you know, much more urban area than I'm in right now, they may be a little more prevalent. But
yeah,
you know, if you go onto Microsoft's website, they do have some some videos about it, and they show a guy, you know, at a train station getting train schedules and so forth by just taking a picture of the tag. And
yeah, but they could also just post the train schedule. Well, I guess you get them like real-time updates. So, yeah. You know, I guess that is a benefit. If you want to try something like this out, if you pick up this week's Entertainment Weekly, it would give you an opportunity to play around with it a little bit. It's not perfect, but, you know, it's free, and if you're interested, you know, go for it.
But you might have to actually physically read actual paper
media. Yeah.
And that's, yeah. You know, Earth Day's coming up and paper, you don't want to do that.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. I retract everything I just said then.
Right. We're moving in the wrong direction here.
Yeah.
Really.
Let's see. What else do we have here? A couple of online RPG type of things. Well, they're both RPGs. One is multiplayer, one is not. Pocket Legends came out. It is free. It is available both for the iPhone and the iPad, and it's a 3D MMO. There are also massively multiplayer online role-playing game. There are three classes. There's a fighter, a ranger, and a mage, and it's okay. How do I put this? If you really want an MMO on your iPhone or iPad, it's not bad. I didn't get too far in it. I played through the first few levels. It was kind of slow and a little bit boring. I imagine it would be better as you go along, but then you've got to grind to get to that. So if you're patient enough to grind it and you like MMOs, this might not be bad. You can join basically like instances with other people, and you can form groups and stuff like that. There's a limited communication system in it. A lot of it's emoting. I can imagine that after the iPhone OS 4.0 comes out and you can multitask, if you can Skype and play this, and if you have a group of friends that you would normally play this with, I think it'd be a lot more fun. Or if you're sitting around in a room with other people who have iPhones and you're playing it, that would be... I think if you can form a group and communicate with the group somehow verbally, this mm-hmm. might not be that bad.
Yeah, I can see it being better then. Otherwise, I haven't played this per se, but...
Yeah, it's not bad, though. And the thing is it's free. So if you think maybe you might be interested in it, check it out. I mean, it's simple. It's not overly complex, so it's still kind of a casual style of MMO. It's not really quest-heavy. It's more combat-heavy. So, you know, it's worth checking out.
It looks to me more like a tech demo than it does anything else.
It kind of does.
Okay. Because I just can't imagine all that it takes to create a successful MMO community being contained strictly within these devices.
No, and that's the thing. Well, especially with this one, at least, the sense of community really is not there.
Right, and my question, and what I would like to see, I think would be a goldmine to see for Blizzard or any other successful MMO, would be to make some way that you could log in from an iPad, even an iPhone, and, you know, make your character, you know, a vendor, or be able to check your auctions, or be able to do kind of some of the more mundane tasks. Like, you're going to go run an instance, or you're going to go run a raid. But the thing that you can do to maintain your character's community and stuff like that on a device like this. And the fact that, you know, Blizzard's put out the, you know, the mobile armory, but that doesn't really interact with the game. It just kind of shows you what you already got. You can't actually change anything.
Yeah.
And I would love to see them take advantage of something like this.
We are totally at a point now where we can justify having a multi-platform MMO with a social community that is not necessarily in the game, where you can log in through an iPhone or especially an iPad and chat and do auctions. Why can't I do auctions from an iPhone? Right. Why do I need to be logged into WoW to do that? I mean, I don't play WoW anymore, but the technology is there.
Yeah, why can't I chat with my guild, or why can't I, you know, do
especially
all those things?
Especially chat.
Yeah, that kind of stuff is perfect for a mobile device.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, now WoW has the built-in calendar system, and you can sign up, and you can, you know, create events, accept, decline, all that kind of stuff.
There's so much administrative and social things going on with these games that you don't have to have a desktop, high-res graphical environment to do a lot of it. Sure, maybe the actual questing and raiding and stuff like that, but the rest of it you don't. And even then, I bet there's a way that you could come up with a game that you could play on the iPad,
right?
As well as you know, something like EVE Online or I mean, looking at Warpgate, what I'm thinking as I'm playing this is I kept talking about how I wanted multiplayer. This would totally be the type of thing that you could do an EVE Online client for and have it work.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, the other RPG that I tried out was Solomon's Keep. It is 99 cents through Saturday, and it's for the iPhone only. But you know what? The graphics are good enough, and there's so little text on it, I imagine it would blow up okay on an iPad. It's a dual-stick shooter, but it's an RPG. So you play this little wizard mage guy. So the shooting stick is basically like you're shooting these little magic missile things at people. But as you level up, you can upgrade into different skills. There's over 21, I think there's 21 skills, and there's over 50 different magic, rare, and epic weapons. So, I mean, you know, we're not talking Diablo 2 here, but on the other hand, for a dual stick shooter, it's not just survival mode. You actually run through castles and you know, collect items and level up and improve skills, and you get to choose which skills you want to go into. You know, you've got area of effect weapons versus, you know, like magic missile things versus things that can shoot around corners and hunt down enemies. It's actually, it brings a new level to a dual stick shooter, and I think it's pretty good. I didn't care much for the navigation. If you're a completionist and you want to look in every little nook and cranny, you're going to find the navigation a little bit annoying because there's no map. And I would really like to see some sort of a map overlay so I can kind of keep track of, you know, where I've gone already and how to get from one place to another.
I think it's your wife talking. We don't need maps. Come on. I'm sorry. Yeah. I had to say that.
Yeah. No, let's not get into my wife and navigation.
Yeah, no, my wife's in the other room, so wow. I can say that. So.
But, you know, for 99 cents, though, if you like dual stick shooters, I can't imagine you not liking a dual stick shooter where you can progress. And you can maybe customize yourself a little bit other than just changing a skin. So I would recommend this, again, at 99 cents through Saturday, and I don't know what it normally is, but I don't think it's that expensive normally. Probably like $1.99. So nice. Anyway, we need to cut out, so I think maybe we might skip the picks this week.
Sounds good.
So sorry about that. And Jeff, again, I'm sorry that we only got you in at the tail end here.
But, that's all right. Too much of me is not good for anybody.
I mean, yeah, well, you know, especially because you have an iPad and I don't, and you suck.
That's true.
But I have the accessories, dang it, and you
that's
don't.
That's true. You have a wonderful case and I don't.
That's
and you
right.
You got a dock and a keyboard or whatever and I don't.
And you know, I stare at this dock all the time and you don't get to stare at the dock all the time, and I bet you really feel like you're losing out.
Does your dock charge real well already? Is it plugged in?
No, I don't actually have it plugged
okay.
to anything. But I could if I wanted to.
If you did, that would have been really sad.
Well, yeah. I just haven't rewired stuff yet. I was going to do that this weekend. Anyway, so moving right along to less pathetic things. All right, so that's it for this week. We've got to cut out because we are going to be recording the return of the Random Chatter podcast. If you've listened to any of our other Random Chatter Network shows, you know that Random Chatter was kind of retired for a while, and we are bringing it back. So if you want to get in at the ground floor of a new podcast, this doesn't count, but it's close enough.
You can search iTunes for something else.
But if you want to get into something old, then join this. Yeah, no, we're relaunching it. It's going to be kind of about geek culture in general. So there'll be a lot of gadgety stuff. We're all smartphone users and stuff like that. There'll also be a lot of, you know, television and movies and you know, whatever it is we want to talk about. It's going to be unscripted and just kind of a free form roundtable type of discussion. We'll probably rotate the hosts out each week. This week we're kind of going with the theme of having the original hosts from the show on, but we'll have people in and out. We'll probably have Jeff on the show. So
not tonight, probably, because not I'm tonight. Not the original host, but at some yeah. point. But you'll bring me in about halfway through on that show too.
I will bring you in after I get my you are not allowed on any of our shows again until I get my iPad.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
Yes. So there.
Have you ordered the iPad yet?
Do you
have the money set aside?
Oh, yeah. this is how pathetic I am. I keep checking my bank account to make sure that if they take the money out today, there's enough in it and I didn't accidentally overspend it. They've taken the money out like 3 times.
Oh, for your iPad? Back.
Yeah.
Oh, so you've actually ordered it?
Oh, yeah. I ordered it the day it was released.
Oh, okay. Rock on.
Yeah. So.
I'll just walk up to an Apple store. You know,
hush. Where's his mute button here? I can't find it. Okay. All right. So anyway, don't forget to add us as friends on OpenFaint and plus. My username is Eric Blythe. It's ErikBlythe. And Lou, what's yours again?
Tell you the truth, I forgot offhand. I think it's Lou.
It's Lou Mile Second. High, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Mile High. MyleHigh.
Okay. And Jeff, you can give yours out if you want to. But
I don't even know, honestly, if I have an OpenFaint account. If I do, then it's very simple. It's Dynamo Supremo, which is DynamoSupremo, because that's where I am everywhere.
Cool.
Nice.
All right. You know, I didn't really care that much about it until we started doing the podcast, and I figured, you know, hey, if people want to add me, then, you know, that's cool. And maybe there will be some games for which that matters, like Wii Rule, which I've kind of quit playing now. But
and they can start buying stuff in your stores.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm such an on and off, though, iPhone/iPad gamer that I hate committing myself to stuff like that, like Words with Friends. Like, I'm now at the point where I play Words with Friends because I'm guilted into it because I feel I have 13 games that need to be played, and I feel bad that I'm not playing them.
It's so, like, oh, I haven't played a turn in 8 days. Oh, this person's probably mad at me. That's
seriously how it happens. And so I'll get on there and play like 3-letter words just so I can give it back to them. And of course, I'm not even through clearing out all my games before somebody's responded back. And so it's a little oppressive.
I know the feeling on that one. Trust me. So maybe a better way to get in touch with us than OpenFaint or Plus would be our email address. You can contact us at podcast@appchatter.com. And I want to encourage you to check out the website, too. Just because we do this awesome podcast doesn't mean that there's not also cool stuff at the website. So check out appchatter.com and our other podcasts. You can find those at randomchatter.com. And that is it for this week. So we will be back next week. We are doing live shows now. If you'd like to check us out, we are using the Random Chatter Network Ustream account. So ustream.tv/channel/randomchatter. We will be having App Chatter there. I think it's probably going to be about every Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern. So
unless we decide to change the time.
Unless we decide to change the time and not tell Jeff, not tell people.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Make sure you get there early, get a good seat.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
If you don't get good seats, you know, your nose bleed, and that's just no good. Anyway, so that's it for this week, and tune in next week when we will have the live show. I will post something to the Random Chatter Twitter account to confirm that for people if you're worried about, you know, when we're going to start and all that. Don't sweat it. Follow us on Twitter at Random Chatter. Also follow App Chatter on Twitter, and we will see you again next week. Jeff, thanks for stopping by.
My pleasure.
All right, see everybody later.
Night, everybody.
For more great app reviews, check out appchatter.com. The songs in this episode are My Own Little World and Unlikely, both written and performed by Cell Dweller, which you can find at celldweller.com. The show is part of the Random Chatter Podcast Network, which you can find at randomchatter.com. This show is copyright 2010 appchatter.com, and as silly as a sentence sounds, all trademarks are owned by their respective owners. Until next time, take care.